Hey, kids, don't forget, we want to hear from you at our Webcomics Weekly Hotline. Just call 214-717-5487. That's 214-717-5487. We want to hear your tips, comments, questions. We might even play them on the air.
Welcome to the second episode of Webcomics Weekly for 2008. It's very confusing. Right. I don't know why I put it that way. By way of introduction, I'm Scott Kurtz with PvPOnline.com. With me tonight is Dave Kellett at SheldonComics.com.
Heyo, pancakes.
Brad Geiger at evil-comic.com.
Hakuna Matata. Ah!
And Christopher Straub at starslipcrisis.com.
I'm liking what I'm seeing.
All four of us consider fancy ourselves to be cartoonists of the web flavor and variety. We have this podcast every week. We've written a book. We want you to buy it. We're here to ply you with our charms.
And lest they get overlooked, speaking thusly is Scott Kurtz of PvPOnline.com.
It kind of wasn't, though.
I said it. I started off
with it. Did you? See, look at me. I'm doing the double talk.
You just care too much.
And lest it be forgotten, Chris Straub, StarCrisis.com.
All right. So anyway, let's get on our first mailbag. Mail can be sent to Scott Kurtz at PvPOnline.com. And I'm Scott Kurtz at PvPOnline.com.
And that was our mail.
And let's hear from the official PvPOnline.com mailbag. PvPOnline.com, Dave, you want to read that?
I do PvPOnline.com. So the first PvPOnline.com mail sent to www.halfpixel.com is from Pat Race at akrobotics.com. And was this the one we wanted to start with? No, it wasn't. I'm a doofus. The one we wanted to start with was from Sean Cook at cookbroscomics.com. That's Cook as in a chef, bros as in brothers, and comics.com, cookbroscomics.com. His question was, hey, guys, love the show. Nice compliment. Okay. My question is about your technique and how you juggle the daily events of life and find the time to do what you do and what it takes to work on all of your projects. I guess what I mean is at some point in your lives, you are all probably working on one or more jobs, trying to maintain a relationship with your significant other, pay the bills, fix the house, all that stuff that most people deal with, and yet maintain the energy levels to push yourself until you, quote, made it. Let's see. So the basic question is time management. How do you find the time, the energy, and the scheduling to do what you do? Both for people with a full-time job, part-time job, or cartooning as their full-time job. Who wants to tackle that one first?
It's not possible to do. So.
No, it's possible. It's possible. Speaking as somebody that's got a full-time job and has been doing a daily comics trip for the last little while here, the key word in his sentence is time management, and the fact is that you really do have to be able to manage your time and to set aside certain times in which you work and to make sure that you're working in those times. And the other big one is if you're married or if you are in a relationship, this does not happen without the 100% full-on ardent support of your significant other. If your significant other is not on board on this thing, it's an uphill climb. I am very, very lucky to be married to a woman that is 100% behind what I do. Otherwise, with two kids, it would be impossible to do a daily comics trip, let alone convention appearances and a podcast on Friday night and all of this other stuff that I get to do basically because she believes in me. So, number one, get yourself some good time management skills. Number two, if you're a guy, get yourself a good wife. You know, get yourself a good significant other because it doesn't happen.
Step one, marry a wonderful woman. Step two, enjoy your webcomic.
That's how it's been over here, let me tell you.
I would love it if step one, marry Brad's wife. Step two, enjoy your webcomic.
It doesn't work with anyone else. Yeah.
If I could clone her for every webcomic significant other, it would be a match made in heaven.
Well, I would like to interject and say that my wife could kick the crap out of your wife. And that if you spent a week getting the love and support from my wife, you would go home and throw rocks at your wife. You'd be like, the hell.
Oh, can I share something with you guys real quick? This has nothing to do with anything. My little boy is 5 years old. Speaking of comparing and contrasting, my little boy is 5 years old. And I just found out that he got into a big fight with his best friend at kindergarten. And we said, well, what are you fighting over? And it turns out this other little boy's father is a painter, like a fine arts painter.
Uh-oh.
And he and his friend got into a knockdown drag out fight over whose dad could draw better.
Wow.
Wow.
So he's telling me now that I've got to draw the Martian Manhunter. Alex is, or my number one son is going to color it. And then and as proof of how good a...
What did you like? Wow. Like in front of your wife, you're like, look, son, fighting is not right. It doesn't matter who can draw better. What's important is both daddies love their sons equally. And your friendship's important. And then as soon as your wife leaves the room, you're like, but I could kick his ass. I could draw circles around that guy. And you tell him I said, bring it.
Yeah, you go. You actually show up at school. All right, where's that little brat?
Or even better,
crayon.
Even better,
crayon.
Step over that line.
The kid's dad is a
Martian Manhunter.
I was going to say the kid's dad is some hugely successful painter, and Brad's like, now you tell Jimmy that his dad paints sissy landscape watercolors, and that your daddy draws Martian Manhunter better than anybody, and he can bring it any day of the week. Because your daddy's not painting happy little trees. Your daddy's drawn the Teen Titans fighting against the apocalypse and
But I had to interject that. I just found out about that this morning. And when you said that Angela could beat up Carolyn, that made me think of that.
You need to draw the Martian Manhunter punching through one of the other guy's paintings.
Yeah. Like,
but
your dad sucks.
It's really funny because I was talking to I think Brad and I both and we don't need to get the details of it, but just to share, Brad and I both over instant message had a talk me off the ledge moment the last week. It was, hey, talk me off the ledge, Scott. And I'm like, all right, I'll talk you off the ledge. And then it was, then it was, Brad, now it's your time to turn to talk me off the ledge. But during
you had,
our –
you had such a beautiful metaphor for your wife.
I said, Brad, I'm at the end of my rope, and I'm looking down, and there's a lot more – space to go before I hit the ground and there's no more rope. And you're like, well, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm not worried. Angie is below me frantically tying strands of hemp into more rope.
I thought that was such a beautiful way of doing things.
Well, it's true. But that's – I mean I wouldn't know how to – as a matter of fact, that was a big part of my acceptance speech when I won my award was I said they need to give awards out to the husbands and wives and partners that are silently behind all these artists that keep them from imploding because we're all horrible at time management. We're all horrible at keeping our brains together. We're all full of anxiety and depression, and our spouses keep us from essentially killing ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so we need an awards ceremony for the wives and the husbands that keep everybody together. But for those of you that aren't in the aren't looking for a wife or a husband right now.
I know. I was just about to talk about that.
For those of you that aren't on the market.
I love my wife. I love my girlfriend. All right. Help answer the question.
For those of you that aren't in the market.
The guy that wrote it is single and happily single, and he's like, what? I just wanted to know how to handle my time management.
for those of you that aren't in the market for a spouse right now, there's some 14-year-old kid going, the hell?
It's not helpful at all.
Time management is key, and getting this office this year has taught me that what I could have done at home – I didn't do until I had the pressure of this office over my head. And thank God I have it because it really taught me better time management. And I think that for those of you that are going to do a day job and do cartooning at night or on the side, a big part of your time management are picking is setting up and picking realistic goals for yourself, projects that you can complete and that will benefit you directly, like working towards a book that you can sell, working towards a product you can sell or content you can sell, you know.
I was terrible at that. Everything I wanted to make was just whatever popped into my head, and then I'd work on that for a couple of days, to no real end, to no goal.
Creatively satisfying.
Oh yeah, definitely. But in the end, you got to figure out where the money is going to come from.
Glow and I sort of have a rule whenever we take on new projects is that. Because my wife is creative too, and we sort of took on this rule is that if we ever take on a new project, it has to be something that if a year from now you would put it on your resume, it would look impressive, and it has to add to the resume. You know what I mean? You can't just be something that takes you backward or is the same thing that you've always done or doesn't either earn you money or points for something further on. If there was some imaginary cartoonist resume, it has to be something that adds to that resume.
That's good.
My wife's key about that. She's fantastic in taking on projects and only add to her wholeness as an artist. You know, it either gives her a skill set, it gives her money, or it gives her a resume builder. And I think that's a great thing. But I think one thing that's missing so far in the talk is that in addition to time management, it's also an acceptance of sacrifice. Because I think a lot of people don't accept or don't want to accept or aren't familiar with how much they'll have to sacrifice. And the truth of it is that you will be working nights, you will be working weekends, you will, when other friends are going out to some fun party, you will be at home updating for the next day's trip or the next month's trip, depending on how far ahead you are. You will be sacrificing money that other people would be paying on a flat screen television, and you'll be printing a book or figuring out con costs that you may not make back. You'll miss out on friendships. You'll miss out on events. You'll miss out on sleep that you might otherwise be getting. But if it's something you really love and
I
truly
quit.
Value.
I was going to say, Scott, can you dub in like sad violin music over there?
I totally will.
Well, you guys are joking, but I know you, and I know that you guys put in hard hours that no one ever hears about. And it sucks to hear it vocalized, but we've all given up, not given up, we've all sacrificed on friendships, on events that we could have gone to. Like this week, there was one party that friends were having that I couldn't get to because I had to get some stuff done for stuff that's coming up with the strip. And, and that time management can help that. And can help it a lot. I just think, though, that you need to acquaint yourself with what I call the new normal. And if you're taking on cartooning in addition to a day job, it's a new normal.
Well, and how about this? You're going to find out that your vacation time, or a huge chunk of it, is taken up with the comic conventions and stuff.
Yeah.
And then you got that conversation, you know?
Yeah. And if you're smart, you're also finding that, like, for 8 years, I was working at Mattel to the point, working towards the point where I could quit and work at Sheldon full time. And if you're smart, you're also even sacrificing your earnings. And by that, I mean I was saving for 8 years so that I would have enough of a cushion so that I could step away and just do Sheldon. So even on the financial front, even when you're earning, you're saving. If you're a smart artist, you know. So it's a life of sacrifice, but the joy is in the work. I mean, so if you're not up at 2 a.m. enjoying drawing, it's going to be really hard. Or, you know, whenever you're drawing, if you're not enjoying when you're doing it, those are the moments that you should be loving and cherishing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to do it for the love. There's no way.
Yeah. But I think I've just depressed myself talking about it.
you depressed the hell out of me. But well, I mean, I can't argue with anything that you said, Dave.
I guess the question is, why do you do it? And if you do it because you love it and because you can't imagine not doing it, then you will find a way to do it.
Well, and I don't think we're talking out of school because we've said it to his face. But Chris, I think that's a problem that our friend Jason had with his strip, was that when things got really tough and he hit the hard parts, being that he didn't come from a background of being an artist or a writer or someone who grew up with a passion for it, he didn't have that compulsion.
He couldn't fall back on, but I got it.
Yeah, but I've got to keep going.
All I know how
right.
to do.
Yeah, it was nothing but this is hard. This is awful. This is a lot of time and money and work, and it's not necessarily
it's not
paying
all
off.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But you have that compulsion to, well, I can't stop. I can't give up to keep going.
Yeah.
Does it help you a little bit OCD?
Oh, definitely.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
No, I'm convinced. I have not in the last 5 to 10 years met another cartoonist that didn't have some mental disorder, whether it's anxiety or depression or OCD. No, I'm serious. I've not met one. Brad,
I think more successful
Brad.
Cartoonists are. You should have more problems, if anything. Try and instill problems in yourself. Like, give yourself phobias.
I love that. I love that advice. Try to instill. Imagine the problems of the world that we're facing. Then
just let them rain down on you at night, and you can't sleep.
Stop taking your meds.
I mean, just because I think people think that it's a money train once you get to a successful point with cartooning. It's good to remind people in my own case that there was, to be honest, maybe 5 or 6 years where I was producing Sheldon 7 days a week and not making any money at all. So 5 or 6 That's years where I was making nothing. And then 2 years where I was doing it maybe part-time, where I could make, you know, half of what my day job was bringing in. And only in the last year have I done it as a full-time job. And a lot of people need to be reminded of that. And there was no guarantee even during those 5 years that I would ever make money. But I still wanted to do it and had to do it because it brought me an intrinsic joy to do it.
I have no sympathy at all whatsoever for the people now that are saying things like, God, I'm doing my webcomic and I don't know if it's going anywhere and I'm working so hard on it. And, you know, I did that grind back when all there was the hope that if an opportunity came along, your strip was out there so someone would see it. There was no Google AdSense. There was no way to make any passive income. There weren't any roads paved to there was no Lulu.com. There was nothing.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Right. And even the overall web audience was smaller. So you were catering to a smaller audience that even exists now, you know?
Which I should have been able to take advantage of, and yet I did not.
No, you did. You did. As well as anybody could at the start of an exponential growth curve, you definitely did.
I guess you're right, if you think about it. My wife gets really upset sometimes because it's not uncommon for me to get this attitude from other webcomics people of, oh, yeah, well, it's easy for you to say. You're sitting up there in your ivory tower with all your success. And she gets frustrated. She's like, she wants to yell at him, and she says things like, they don't realize that our marriage was on the rocks because you were working all day and I never saw you because you'd come home and do your comic until you collapsed, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone just assumes that it just happened. You just woke up one day and had PvP, you know.
Exactly. In fact, the next time – if you're a cartoonist and the next time you're at a Comic-Con and you're feeling jealous or envious of a cartoonist, the trick is to just find a sense of inspiration to work harder because – yes, there's that one cartoonist that everybody's heard about that sort of struck it rich all of a sudden and either got picked up by a publisher or got syndicated or some big event happened and maybe they didn't deserve it. But that's one out of 100 successful cartoonists. The other 99, I guarantee, worked harder than you, worked harder than me, worked harder than anybody else. And I don't say that casually. I mean people that worked till 3-4 in the morning every night for years and years and years and years and years. And those are the Jeff Smiths of the world. And those are the guys that are finding huge success because of the 10 to 20 years that you didn't hear about them, that they were working their ass off.
Yeah, Brian Michael Bendis, who writes for Marvel, always says I'm a 10-year overnight success because he was working in comics for 10 years before he kind of hit it big and everyone called him an overnight success.
Right.
All right,
so,
awesome.
Oh yeah, take a long time. It takes a long time to become an overnight success.
It does.
Yeah. But the trick is and it's worth emphasizing because it's there's nothing to replace hard work. Hard work will get you where you want to go eventually. It may take you a decade, but hard work will get you where you want to go.
I think that's good and well covered. Because and the point about him having to work for 10 years is so important, because nobody sees the how much effort you put into it. All you see is 4 panels every day.
Right.
Yeah.
But behind all of that, like for Starslip, Chris is researching. Chris is doing website design. Chris is working on how to lay out the next book. He's trying to figure out the pagination for it. He's contacting and getting quotes for the next book. He's working on plush quotes for the new Jinxlets. I mean, all the stuff that you never hear about. He's fulfilling orders. And all four of us are doing stuff like this. And
yeah.
There's countless other hundreds that are doing stuff like this. And what you see is the 4 panels. But there is literally, 10 hours of work potentially every day that you could be doing on your comic alone.
And it never ends. Every month, you got to figure out how to make money that month. Every year, you got to figure out what you're going to do this year that's going to make you better and different than last year. It never ends. You never cross a finish line. You never spike the football and do the dance. You're always struggling.
But you look forward to that, though.
Yeah.
No, yeah. We're saying that. I have no problem with this sounding a little negative, because people need to wake up to it. I was talking on a podcast last night, and we were discussing working in comics with Mark Brooks, who works for Marvel, and Jaime Mendoza, who works for Marvel, who's his inker. And they're friends with a guy named Todd Knock, who also draws comics for DC. Todd is this wonderful exception to the rule that loves drawing comics. Doesn't matter what day it is. He never has one of those days where he just doesn't want to draw. And he was telling Jaime, you just got to love it. You just got to love it. And I said, that's bad advice, because 90% of the time, you have to draw on the days that you don't want to draw. And it's fun to do it, but it's a struggle 90% of the time. And if you don't – I mean, there's a payoff for it, but you've got to be realistic about it. Otherwise, you're just going to set yourself up for a disappointment and a failure.
Yeah, and the love has to be there. And maybe that's beating the dead horse, but the love has to be in the process somewhere, even in the struggle. Because like Scott said, it will definitely be a struggle on more days than you care to admit. But you have to love that struggle, because there's a sense of accomplishment at the end of every day that you get one more done.
Yeah, you just got to push through.
But, I mean, we say this with negativity – or not negativity, but with a sense of reality, because I think too many people think, and we talk about this in the book, is that there's some life of grand swan-filled pools in comics waiting you. And there never is. There is a life to and earnings to be made and success to be had, and sometimes very comfortable livings to be made. But you will always be working with these never-ending deadlines. You will always be working with the struggles you had even as a beginning cartoonist, because you'll always be the same insecure person and, looking for validation that you always were, but it'll just be in new venues. And but if you find joy in that, if you love the outlet more than anything else, it'll work out with you for you over the course of a couple of years or decades, as the case may be.
And if not, it's not the end of the world. You know what I mean? I mean, for some of these guys, they're thinking, what happens if I can't find the drive? Well, what happens if you can't find the drive is that maybe you become a hobbyist, or maybe it becomes a very happy time in your life where you were doing a strip or you're doing a comic, and now that's over, and you know what that's like, and you can move on at that point. And it's not the end of the world. Not mm-hmm. everybody is going to be doing this for the next 10 years. That very few people are able to do it for that amount of time. And you know what? There's no shame in that either.
No.
Maybe it just becomes something that you did. It was good for when it was. And now you're on to the next thing. And you might have a whole new slew of creative challenges in front of you.
Hey, guys, how do we advise people? Because we're telling everyone to stick with it and push through and find a way to make it through the tough times. How do we give that advice at the same time that we avoid convincing a cartoonist to keep pushing forward when all they're doing is hitting a brick wall, and the proper thing to do is take a step back, rethink it, and maybe go around that wall? I'm thinking of cartoonists that I've known since I was kids that are working the same characters they created when they were 10, and they just won't give up on an idea, and they just keep going, and it's never going to go anywhere. And yeah. What it's going to take is for them to realize it and regroup and try something new and experiment to find what's next.
Well, I think that's let me jump in there.
It's important that
anybody can stay active on some level and revisit and go back to the drawing board and figure out what tack they want to take and not – spend all of their effort and all of their money and all of their resources into trying to make it work if it's not working. But you can always stay near it. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and
there will always be time during the day that you can doodle and draw and work on it.
Well, and I think, too, the advice along the same lines that Chris was just getting at is that you don't have to stop being a cartoonist. You just need to find a different type of cartoon to do. It's like if the Ford company had only done the Edsel and it was all they ever wanted to do and tried so hard, but then eventually realized that they're great at making cars, they just weren't good at making the Edsel. So, but I guess, Scott, I guess your question is, how do you know when you've been pushing the Edsel for 10 years? Is that the idea? Is like what's the key moment? That's a hard one. Because we all know that cartoonist who's been doing the same strip for 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, and by God, he or she is going to keep doing it because someday it's going to click. But everyone else around them seems to know that it's not the one to click. That's a hard question. How do you let them know?
Let me answer that one because I was that guy. You know, I Greystone Inn for 5 years was a great comic that just never clicked with readers. And any one of you could have pulled me aside and told me that and explained that to me, but I would have never listened to it. It was me and Greystone against the world, and it was going to hit one of these days. And after all, it was doing better and better. And you know, sooner or later, it was going to be exponential. You can't tell a guy that he's on the wrong track. He's got to work that out for himself. And I'll tell you what's not that bad about it. It's not that bad because every year I worked on Greystone Inn, I was learning the things that makes Evil Incorporated what I consider to be a really, really good strip.
Yeah.
You know, that was time well spent. That was time, if you want to consider that your minor league days, if you want to consider that your learning days. I was doing a daily strip. I was updating it 6 days a week, and I was learning the stuff then that made me a better cartoonist.
Yeah,
and I don't think you can pull somebody aside and tell them that they're barking up the wrong tree. They've got to come to that, and they will, sooner or later. They've got to come to that on their own.
And Brad, what? Because this is I think where you can be helpful to people is what was the moment where you suddenly realized, or what was the event or the trigger?
I can tell you exactly where that was. All I got to find it on my.
My wife came in and said, "You're done with Greystone Inn."
I thought it was going to be worse. It was like, okay, so I'm sitting on the toilet, right? And I'm reading U.S. News and World Report.
No, I was at Toronto Comic Con on April 29th through the 30th, in 2005, because I keep all of my little things up here, my little press badges or whatever you call them. Okay. April 30th, 2005, in Artist Alley at Toronto, I'm sitting there watching people walk by. I'm an Artist Alley, and I'm just watching them walk by. And I'm trying to pull them aside with, it's a comic strip about a comic strip starring a gargoyle. It's kind of like Who Framed Roger Rabbit and walking by and walking by. And it had been kind of sneaking up on me for a number of months. But at that moment, I sat there, opened up my sketchbook, and came up with the first 3 weeks of Evil Incorporated. Because at that point, I knew, listen, I'm not reaching these people. I know I'm good at what I do. I know I can draw well. I know I can write a good joke. This just isn't working with people. And I was at a comic book convention, and that may have kind of swayed me a little bit. But really, honest to God, the thought in my mind was, I've got to draw a comic that fits into a genre. It's got to be something that has a certain amount of people that are automatically going to give it a shot just because it fits into their genre. And so I chose superheroes. Flipped it on its side, decided to take it from the supervillain aspect, and wrote 3 weeks sitting there as people had, you know, as people were nice enough not to bother me at my table for Greystone Inn. I sat and wrote the first 3 weeks of Evil Incorporated. And at the end, I sat there on the plane ride back. I knew it was just going to be a matter of time before I put that into play.
Wow. And towards the end of the con, people were actually coming up and going, "Hey, what is?" And you go,
"Get away, get away!"
Pound salt. It's too late now.
Salt. I'll be honest though. I have respect for all three of you though, because I'll be honest, I'm very happy with Sheldon. I'm really enjoying doing it in the last, say 2 or 3 years, and I've had fun with it. But there's always a part of me, and maybe there's a secret part of you guys, that suspects, like, well, this strip is great, but I wonder if I did, who knows, XYZ of a strip, if that would be my Peanuts or my Calvin and Hobbes or my...
Always.
Or my, and I have to say, though, that the three of you have done a better job in your adult life of taking risks and trying different ideas than I have. And maybe that's just a matter of me now having a little more free time and I'll do it more. But, like, Scott has done, what, 2-3 projects now that in the last year. Chris is constantly coming up with ideas. Brad had the bravery to completely go in a new direction 2 or 3 years ago. And I just haven't had my bravery, for lack of a better word, to do that. And so I'd be curious to hear what your guys' thoughts are on that in terms of experimentations with different stuff.
Oh, I'll tell you right now, Chris and I tell each other all the time that Dave is much funnier than necessarily Sheldon. Like, Sheldon is – I'm not saying Sheldon's not funny, but what I'm saying is I would love to write a strip like Sheldon that would work in papers, but – you know, PvP is what I'm doing. You know, I just recently got something from a newspaper editor. He wants to put PvP in a paper in Houston. And I told him he could edit it up because I know that you can't run that in papers. And he said, I'm not worried about your choice of words. I'm just worried about the content. We can't mention, you know, I'm worried about the strips where you mention boobs. And it kind of made me sad. And I thought about Dave with Sheldon. And it's like, you know, why... Because I have people telling me to go in the other direction all the time. Like, Scott, you curse like a sailor, and you're sharp, and you're dark. And if you had that in a strip, it would take off and go to the moon. And here I am worried that PvP is too much. But like Dave, if you did another strip that was more geared to the way you are when you're not putting on your Sheldon hat, I mean, I think it would go to the moon. And that's unfair to say to you, because I get upset when people say to me the same thing, you know. And I'm
we've had PvP? That conversation before, and I've actually thought about that. For me, cartooning channels a specific part of my personality. Like, when I want to go really blue, I write for sketch comedy and do that in Los Angeles. And when I want to go, like, more character based and long form, I'll do screenplay stuff with my wife. But if, for whatever reason, strips have always maintained a certain sweetness in my creative consciousness, you know? And so that's why Sheldon has always maintained that for me. We've had this conversation, or at least Chris and I have, about that with me and with Sheldon in terms of self-editing for content. And I've actually come to peace with that in the way that I write Sheldon. But it's not a question of would I do another strip like that, because I would. For me, the broader question is, why can't I even get going on a second strip, which is what you guys have all done in recent years, and that's what I was getting at, is I'm happy to do that second strip. I just can't seem to get moving on it.
Yeah, I can't either. I mean, I've done one-shot projects, but a second strip, I just can't.
Yeah, but you've done Justin, though, and you sort of you reissued your older work in terms of some college stuff, and Chris is constantly churning out volume, and like I said, Brad had the courage to completely go a whole new direction, and I was wondering what your guys' thoughts were in terms of your mindset as you do these second and third projects.
The biggest thing that keeps me from doing a second project is I sit down and I put it together and I think about where I'm going to find the time. Like, because a couple of ideas I've had are comic books where I actually will sit down and draw like a graphic novel. Rich Stevens was telling me that my time, because I was talking to Rich about maybe I'm stupid not to try to do a second version of PvP and get it in papers. And his response was, your time would be better spent with taking that time and doing a graphic novel with it. And I think he's right.
He is right, yeah.
But when I sit down and think of I would love to do a second strip, even if I did it twice a week or three times a week, I'll sit down and I'll write it and I'll plot it out or I'll come up with concepts. And then my brain always goes, well, why not just use that in PvP? Why do I have to – why create something new? Why not just use that in PvP?
Yeah.
See, that's different from how I feel, because I always feel hemmed in by my strip, where I'm like, I can't do this in what I'm doing, so I've got to invent a new playground to do that in, you know? Yeah, it is great because it's wide open.
You probably have that more than the rest of us, because you're set in the future and you're set in space and you're set away from cultural references and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. For my own personal aspect, it's really a different animal, because my other two strips I do as part of my day job at the Daily News. So it's kind of like one of them came up as a part of something that just kind of fell in my lap. And Fables was something that I pushed for about a year before they finally gave me the shot to do it every other week. But they were, both of those were kind of an attempt that, since it didn't look like I was going to be able to quit my day job anytime soon for my perfect job, it was an attempt by me to try to turn my day job into my perfect job, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
In regard, and those two, the other thing is that those two things are so completely different from what I do in Evil Incorporated that it's easy to kind of keep them. You know, I would never be tempted to use According Disaster gag in Evil Incorporated, and nothing from Evil Incorporated is ever going to fit in Fables, you know, so I can kind of easily keep those things separated.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really don't know which way to go with my second strip. Do I go more in the Sheldon direction, family friendly, or do I go more in the opposite direction? And my fear is, if I go in the opposite direction and just cut loose, you know, if someone is a PvP fan, they're like, oh, what's this, another strip Scott Kurtz does? I'll go check it out. Whoa.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, the other thing is there, however, is how much money do you really think you would make if you tapped into the newspaper market?
I don't
As mean. Opposed to if you put that same time into doing a graphic novel.
A newspaper strip for at least the first 3 years isn't going to make you much past $15,000, $20,000, you know?
If they accept
that they accept it, and that you're getting into, God, I don't know, 30 papers, 50 papers. Even that as a launch is really tough lately. Aside from Leo, everybody's had a heck of a time, even with all the people quitting lately, getting slots. I wouldn't shoot for newspapers, but I think
Leo,
what Scott's talking about
quitting.
Is,
what are you talking about?
Leo is a
pantomime strip that Mark. What's his name, Dave? Mark Tatulli?
Tatulli, I think. Yeah,
he's the cartoonist that does Heart of the City.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
That comic about the little girl in Philadelphia.
He quit?
That's his No. He started up a second strip that's basically a pantomime strip. There's no words in it.
Oh, no, by quit, Scott, I meant for better or for worse, going into kind of pseudo reruns and Tumbleweeds quitting. And,
Lucky Cow just quit this week.
Yeah, Lucky Cow just quit, and Bananas, or what's that one? Anyway.
Criminal, that I've never heard of any of these strips.
I've never heard of Lucky Cow. What are you talking about?
Another reason, Scott, be working on the graphic book.
Don't pursue newspapers. That's my general. I mean, Rich is playing it about as Rich of Diesel Sweeties is playing it about as smart as you can, in the sense that he's milking it for what's left of being worth it with newspapers. But he's keeping his web ownership. And man, a giant doff of the cap to him on that, because that's the absolutely smartest way you could play newspapers right now.
There's
very little cachet left, and it's increasingly impossible to do anything with a career in newspapers. There's probably two or three more guys that'll get some leg room out of it.
Why does that make my heart sad? Like, why is that so hard for me to let go? Is it because of my dad?
There's a nostalgia for all of us.
Each and every one of us into the business.
Yeah, it's
except,
it's
except maybe Chris. I don't know your feelings on that, Chris.
I feel like a Scrooge here, like a hardened and cruel and mean. But I don't feel the. I mean, obviously, I wanted to be a cartoonist because of newspaper comics that I grew up with and read. That's what I wanted. But I completely understand what's going on with them and why they are failing. It's true. I've never aspired to, one day that's going to be me.
You never had that fantasy ever?
When I was very young, but when I got a little older and into junior high, where it starts to, you start going, maybe I would do this. I didn't say, but how do I get into the newspaper? What do I need to do to get into that newspaper? Which is weird because at the time there wasn't enough internet to. It's not like I was thinking about the internet.
Yeah, that's just impossible. I mean, I know Dave and Scott are on the same boat as me. I grew up absolutely fantasizing about seeing my work in a newspaper.
Yeah, I can't get past it. I can't get past it.
It's weird. Even today, when I give away Sheldon to papers to use as a promotional tactic for me and for a content issue for them, I still get so chuffed every time two or three new newspapers pick it up because it's like, oh, fantastic. And it's like, who cares? I'm still making more money than a lot of guys that I know that are syndicated. Why should I even care about print? But there's an emotional tie to print that keeps me interested, you know?
Well, and it's still a significant amount of readers. You know, I know
the readership is far, far higher. But because of, you know, we talk about this in the book too, because of disintermediation, you know, you need 100,000, 200,000 readers in print to do anything with a career in syndication. In the web, you can start making a living on 10,000 to 30,000 readers in with web comics. You know,
that's exactly
right. And there's some sort of attraction emotionally as an artist to just having a larger audience, even if you were making less money, which is so odd. You know. It's like selling a platinum album but making less money. You're like, oh, I still want it. I just wanted the platinum album. Oh, it's that validation we were talking about before, you know?
Oh, yeah. I think validation goes into a big
– Uh-oh.
Whoop. Brad, I do not want to be validated.
I'm still here.
He's still alive. He's still there. All right, go ahead.
hold on a second. Alex, what did you want to tell me? We'll show him, don't you worry. That's right. You got to go potty? You're dancing. Okay. I'm sorry about that, guys.
Don't be. That was awesome.
That's one for the time management question, too.
Well, you know, it's so funny. It's so funny that we're coming up on 43 minutes and we've run out of time and we didn't get any other questions in because of poor time management.
It was a really good discussion though.
But that was one of I think there was a lot of points tonight that are good for all cartoonists to hear, you know. I think it's important for a lot of people who are still pining for print to know that that is not the oasis that it once was and probably hasn't been for the last 10 years, but especially in the last 4 or 5 years has it really started to fall apart.
Well, specify print. You mean newspapers.
I mean newspapers. Yeah. Oh, there's still...
I can't believe how many people still have that illusion, though, that they're going to get a big contract with some kind of syndicate and life is going to be easy street. I kind of thought...
Well, even when it was good, it was never that.
No.
But still, I'm still finding myself talking to people, and they still have this real mystique around the syndicate program, you know.
Well,
and it's like,
to be fair,
come
though,
on, you guys.
The guys that have been going for 20 years or 25 years, a lot of those guys are making very healthy mid six figure incomes, you know, and low to mid six.
Just from the newspaper money, not including their. There.
Yeah, well, yeah, and book reprints and maybe a little bit of licensing. But so there is a little bit to the old myth that you could make a hell of an income from print.
Yeah, but not,
but the
in, the
is
not
no
for
one
anybody
has,
in the last 5 years.
Yeah, definitely not in the last 5 years and very rarely in the last 10 years is someone even making six figures, you know?
Dave, mm-hmm. Brad,
What
we'll do is we'll use this book to get everyone to go to the web. And then once they're all on the web... Nobody will be submitting to syndicates, and the three of us are shoo-ins.
That's a great idea.
That extra $6,000 a year is mine.
All of a sudden, United Media is looking at their mailbag, and it's just empty. There's
And listen, it doesn't matter if we're making any money. We're just going to walk around with the funny pages, and if anyone comes up and is like, hey, you can't park there, you'll just go, and just shove the
– Hey, you can't park there.
Right next to Garfield.
Don't you know who I am?
You see that right there? What do you call that? The Fusco Brothers? Above it. Dog Eats Doug? Below it. Pivip? What's
and
Pivip?
And I draw noses better, by God.
Mm.
Not more than the Fusco Brothers, you don't, Brad.
Curse curses, foiled again.
But yeah, so the two lessons for tonight: you got to work really hard, and then you won't make a lot of money. No, there is. The thing is, statistically and just by sheer odds, you've got to do it for the love, because the odds are very strong that whether you're doing it in print or whether you're doing it on the web, that you will have a very hard road to hoe to make a living in either. But that's why we were saying you have to do it for the love first, because it's going to take years and years and years, and there's no guarantee at the end of it. And that might sound depressing, but it shouldn't, because cartooning is such a rewarding creative outlet, even when there's no money involved.
Well, and yeah, that's going to sound depressing, but it shouldn't, because we made it, so we're fine.
So don't worry about us.
Don't worry about us. We're going to be great.
Don't cry for me, Argentina.
You guys might not, but we are fine. Please buy our book.
Also, brother, can you spare a dime?
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, I feel good about that one. I'm ready to put this podcast to bed.
All right. On that cheerful note,
Web Comics Weekly.
Heyo, Brad Gagner. That's just our sign off now. All right, Brad Gagner.
Heyo, Brad Gagner.
Let's just call him out. He's the only one who deserves a mention.
That's right. All right, you've been listening to Brad Gagner.
You've been listening to Brad Gagner, and if you think that you can draw the Martian Manhunter better, he will fight you.
He will punch you in the nose. You will look like the Fusco brothers.
Like the Fusco brothers. There's 20 people right now Googling Fusco brothers.
Trying to figure out what strip that is.
My line from the book where Chris says, save Brad the time and punch yourself in the mouth.
That's right. Chris actually did write that.
I forget
what
it was in reference to, but I thought that was the funniest line. Save Brad the time and punch yourself in the mouth.
It was in reference to being a polite booth neighbor. If you're not bringing some food or a hot dog or sandwich back to Brad, then you may as well just...
That is greatness. See, Chris, if you had an outlet for that humor, you'd be doing a lot better.
Now I'm going to go back to writing a joke about some star cluster.
Tomorrow it's going to be like, hey, why don't you save Memnon the time and punch yourself in the space mouth?
Right. In the star mouth galaxy rocket.
And that's a lot like Moliere.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da-bump, Andromeda.
Who liked it? Right? Somebody.
Chris is like, great, now I got to take that joke and somehow find a way to have it mimic the Odyssey. Because there's always a subtext.
I got to rework it.
Pointillism into that joke.
Chris, we should tell him about the idea I gave you for a strip today, and by the end of it, it was the worst idea.
Which one? The asylum?
Yeah, I said, look, just make a strip about an asylum. And he's like, well,
all right.
Who are the characters? Like, and I'm like, look, what you do is the inmates are the sane people. And that's something people can relate to, because everybody feels crazy and everybody feels like they have foibles and problems. And so you make the inmates the sane people, and then the doctors and the people on the outside world are the crazy people, because they believe that this illusion of control is real. And Chris goes, yeah. And I go, and that's funny. You make that funny. And Chris, what is it that you said?
No, I was talking about how, like, and then that, you question what is real and what do we spend our time on? And you ended this existential scenario where you're trying to meet out the various aspects of your life that you need to measure and determine. It actually has a lot to do with what is inside all of us. And, you know, there's farts.
And their farts.
And then the other joke was, I said, Scott, I'm going to do it. That is awesome. I've got it. It's an asylum, and all the inmates are the sane ones, and the doctors are crazy, and it's underwater.
Yeah. All right, guys. Let's wrap it up. PvPOnline.com. I'm Scott Kurtz. With us tonight, again, Dave Kellett, ShowlinComics.com.
Good night, everybody.
Brad Geiger with Evil-Comic.com.
Thank you.
And Chris Straub with StarSlipCrisis.com.
Oh, yeah.
And we have been your Webcomics Weekly panel. Home.
I just love it when they all go
home.
That should be our sign off. And then Brad fading off. Hakuna Matata.
Oh, you aching? Yup, yup, yup. For some bacon. Yup, yup, yup. He's a big pig. Yup, yup. You could be a big pig too. Boy.